Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD, where we hope you stay well. But our specific mission is for you to take charge of your health, to give you enough information so you can do that and live at the top of your curve for as long as you want and as long as you can. Disturbing data out this week. U.S. life expectancy flat for the third straight year at almost 79. What does that mean? Especially in light of some other data this week that says, in fact, that life expectancy among Hispanics, among non-Hispanic black, and among non-Hispanic white, both increased. How can that be true? We'll come back to that because it really is fascinating and says a lot. We'll also talk about diabetes. It says it's finally going down. Is that right? No, it isn't. But we'll talk to you about what the data means and why it is. What do trimethylamines do to promote health? What do trimethylamines anyway? Well, Stan Hazen, who I believe will get or should get the Nobel Prize for his work on the microbiome and how it relates to heart disease, and how red meat and egg yolks relate that way, and what you can do about it. We'll talk about that today, too, as well as the fact that how can obesity be increasing, yet our diabetes is going down? Is it true? That's what we'll come to grips with. Yeah, there are a lot of great stories out this week, but I want to also go over what is the most important things for you to do for the rest of your life and my own New Year's resolutions so that you can know what to do yourself, make choices yourself. We'll come back. Sleeping later on weekends may be bad for you. What does that mean to me since I try and sleep late every weekend to catch up? And that is catching up an appropriate way? We'll talk about the color-changing thing that fights antibiotic resistance. We talked about this once before, but it's too important to not talk about. And, of course, we have a great book guest, Jenny Santi, S-A-N-T-I, with a foreword by Deepak Chopra, talking about the giving way to happiness. What is happiness, and why does giving, volunteering, finding a purpose in life, get you there? We'll talk about four things you've emailed us about that. Philanthropists, is that the way to go? Is it just the rich who give and get happiness? The mafia gives, and evil like ISIS people give social structure where they are. Do they get happiness from giving too? Doctors, why are doctors not at the top of philanthropist lists? And what does Richard Rockefeller's being a physician have to do with that? And then is Jenny Santi's book for the rest of us? How do ordinary people find happiness with giving? Do they find the same type of happiness as these really rich givers that she writes about find? We'll come back to all of that today. But first I want to start out with something that I think is really important before you misunderstand what the data is. The data says diabetes down, but obesity is up. Can that be? And the answer is not so fast. The new cases of diabetes are down. That is, and if I read you the data, you'll be impressed with what a great decrease it is. That is the decrease in diabetes risk. Well, here it is. If you look at it's not risk, and it's not anything other than, if you will, the actual number of new cases. So it's new cases of diabetes, and I'll read you the exact numbers. So in 1993, the number of new cases of diabetes was around 800,000. in the United States. These are all data in the United States. 1995, 800,000. 1997, 800,000. 1999, 1 million. 2001, 2 years later, 1,000,002. 2003, another 2 years later, 1,000,003. 2005, another 2 years later, 1.5 million. 2007, 1.6 million. Notice it's gone up pretty predictably every 2 years by another million. 2009, 1.7 million. And then all of a sudden, it turned around. 2011, 1.5 million. 2013, 1.5 million. 2014, 1.4 million. Is this real despite obesity going up? And the answer is no. It relates to weirdness in the population. That is, our risk of it, we've gone from 2 million diabetics in 1974 to 29 million. That's more than a tenfold. It's a 15-fold increase by 2014. So over those 40 years, a 15-fold increase, despite only a 50% increase in the population. Well, what makes the headline right? It said diabetes is going down. Well, the new cases are going down, but the total cases are staying the same, not staying the same, they're going up. And why is that? Because the people who are getting diabetes in the population as we age, these are age-adjusted incidences of diabetes, and because the old are more common in the population and the young are not getting diabetes with as fast a rate, you have a weirdness in the data. But the problem is that as we get more Hispanics and more Asians, they are at greater risk of diabetes genetically. And so that's why the CDC prediction of 120 to 180 million, maybe as high as 220 million, if we keep on this course by the year 2050, is scary, because we now use 1.75% of our entire GDP on caring for diabetics. If we look at it in the year 2050, it would be 15 to 20%. So would be osteoarthritis care and dementia care and heart disease and post-cancer care, each of those. So it would be over, we would be using 90% of our GDP just for six diseases in the United States. We obviously can't do that. And that goes with the other fact. Healthcare spending increased 5.3% last year, except at the federal level where it increased 11.3%. Especially with drug costs and the expansion to more of our population, which means we can't sustain this. We will get rationing if we don't get rational. So that's part of this story. Now, contrast that with the other thing that we learned, if you will, that if you avoid obesity in early adulthood, you avoid heart disease. If you avoid, and if you're more fit as you go through life, you decrease your risk of all diseases. We'll come back to that as we come back from our break, but I want to just tweak one more thing that Stan Hazen came up with. Stan Hazen's the one who said, if you eat red meat or egg yolks, carnitine, lecithin, choline, those substances with those, the meat protein, milk protein, egg yolk protein, those things, in fact, will increase your risk of having inflammatory mediators come from your bacteria. And we'll come back to what that means for you, because Stan Hazen, and I'm going to tell you next week, I'm going to tell you what he told us on how you can prevent that effect and how he's helping prevent it. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Stay tuned. We got a great show for you this Saturday.
Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Suzanne Bennett. Are you truly fed up with that fat tummy? That growing muffin top which makes you feel bloated, sick and tired all the time? Then I have the answer for you. I am so ready to share my Flat Sexy Belly program so you can get rid of that swollen belly and at the same time feeling fabulous and energized the all-natural way. In my Flat Sexy Belly deep dive, you will heal your gut and at the same time lose weight, improve your energy, sharpen your mental focus, and even sleep deeper. Go to drsuzanne.com/FSB and enter promo code radio at the checkout for half off the program price. Again, that's drsuzanne.com/FSB and use the promo code radio. Get ready for the new you.
Do you have a great idea for a radio show but have no idea where to start? Or have you been hosting a podcast for a while and want to take it to the next level? If so, you need the Gab Radio Network. To host a show on the Gab Radio Network, all you need is your voice, and we'll handle the rest. From technical engineering to full-service audio production and much more. Every show on the Gab Radio Network can be heard on our station on the TuneIn Radio app. Plus, we put all of our shows on our satellite, which is accessed by over 5,500 stations. And here's the best part. You can host from anywhere you want. There are many means to connect to the Gab Radio Network remotely, and our staff of highly trained engineers and producers will make you sound like you're right here in studio. So, if you want to be on the Gab Radio Network, the same network that hosts the Small Business Advocate, Radio MD, and The Federalist, send an email right now to sales@gabradionetwork.com. That's sales@gabradionetwork.com.
Whenever we talk about cancer, we always use the same word, someday. Someday there'll be a cure. Someday we won't lose the people we love. But when is someday? Someday is today. Thanks to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, hundreds of thousands diagnosed with blood cancer are today living a normal life. In the past 12 years, half the cancer therapies approved by the FDA were first approved for blood cancer patients, many with research supported by LLS. We are on the brink of life-changing breakthroughs. You can make these happen sooner. Call 888-HELP-LLS or visit lls.org. Help us make cures happen. Help us reach today sooner. Call 888-HELP-LLS or visit lls.org.
Every 39 seconds, an adult dies from a heart attack, stroke, or related disease. These conditions claim the lives of more than 800,000 adults each year and are largely preventable. Two leading risks for heart disease and stroke are high blood pressure and high cholesterol, serious conditions that often have no symptoms. 68 million adults have high blood pressure and 71 million have high cholesterol. Here's what you can do to reduce your risk. Take your prescription medications to control blood pressure or cholesterol. Eat a healthy diet that's low in salt, fat, and cholesterol, and full of fresh fruits and vegetables. Take a brisk 10-minute walk, 3 times a day, 5 days a week. Don't smoke. If you do, quit now. While you've been listening, one person has died from heart disease or stroke. You don't have to be next. Learn more about how to keep your heart healthy at www.cdc.gov/heartdisease.
RadioMD.com.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Michael Roizen, MD. Here's Dr. Mike.
And where we were so far is to talk about the key things, obesity and diabetes, obesity leading to diabetes. Those cases at long last began to fall, but it's because of the population shift. And in fact, as the population shifts older, as we get more people who are of Asian and Hispanic descent, we will increase this and increase it by fourfold, at least, according to the CDC, maybe by sixfold, or even, if you look at their high estimate, 220 million people We're at 29 million now, so that's almost eightfold over by 2050, with only a 30% increase in the population. That will use way too much. And we saw that we were increasing healthcare spending. So people say, what's the most important thing? What food can I eat? What pill can I take? Believe it or not, it's the basics of lifestyle that are key. And that's shown by some studies. So if you stay thin, you decrease your risk of cardiac disease and sudden death. How much? Well, if your waist is under a BMI, or if your waist is less than half your height, you are one half as likely to die by over the next 28 years as someone whose BMI is 30 or above, or whose waist is greater than twice their height. So this is really, so obviously people in the borderline, it's not that much, but it still is important. The other thing that was interesting, if you do a treadmill test, and that's a stress test, independent of your blood pressure, independent of your smoking, independent of your LDL cholesterol, independent of everything, they looked at this data and said, what's the likelihood you'll die 25 years later? Over the next 25 years, for every minute greater than 10 minutes, you were able to do on a treadmill stress test. And it's a specific test, but I'll tell you how to do it in a second. If you do that, every minute over that, you're able to, in fact, decrease your risk of dying by 15%. So you do it 10 minutes more. You go to 21 minutes, and in fact, you're in the lowest risk group. You've made your body the equivalent of 10 years younger by age 55. Really remarkable with just fitness. How do you do that? How do you do the test? Well, first of all, you get your docs okay to say you can do a maximum stress test. Obviously, it's very safe for anyone to do it, or incredibly safe for anyone to do it in a cardiologist's office. But how do you do it on your own? If you want to do it on a treadmill, you start at 2.5 miles per hour, and you increase, and by the way, at 2 degrees elevation, and you increase that elevation 1 degree every minute. And then when you hit 15 degrees, that's 12 minutes into it or 13 minutes into it, you then increase your rate on the treadmill by 0.1 miles per hour every minute. So at, in fact, 21 minutes, you're at 3.3 miles per hour and 15 degrees elevation. You can do that. You're in the lowest risk group in America, the lowest risk group we know of. You can get fitter than that, but you can't get healthier from cardiovascular activity than that. So that's how you do that test if you want to do it. Obviously, don't do it if you're over 40. Don't do it without your doctor's permission. Don't do it without cardiovascular disease, etc. I promised you I would talk to you a little bit about Stan Hazen stuff. So, but before I get there, I want to go into, so what is most important? We said keeping thin and then physical activity. There are four components of physical activity. We'll come back to those. Managing stress and then eating a healthy diet. If you do those four things, which lead to, we call it actually, six endpoints. No smoking and no cotinine in your urine. Your blood pressure below 125 and below 85, systolic and diastolic. Your LDL cholesterol below 100. Your fasting blood sugar or hemoglobin A1C. Your hemoglobin A1C or fasting blood sugar in the normal range, meaning below 5.7 for hemoglobin A1C and below 110 for your blood sugar, or 107 actually for your blood sugar. And you manage stress by, you're okay on your stress scale, your own stress scale. We'll have an accurate test of that. You do those six endpoints, six habits, if you will, healthy diet, normal cardiovascular activity, that is doing 10,000 steps a day, plus the other three components we'll mention, avoiding toxins, managing stress, I'm missing one, obviously diet, eating a healthy diet, nine fruits and vegetables, etc. If you do that, you have only 10 to 20% of the chance of having a chronic disease of anyone else over the next 28 years. Well, so those are really the big things you have to do. Everything else, you know, whether you have watermelon versus beets, whether you have sweet potatoes versus cauliflower, everything else is minor. Well, let me tell you what I wanted to get to what Stan Hazen said because it was such an important stuff. Your microbiome is the bacteria in and on you, and the bacteria in your gut, you have 100 trillion of them, 10 times as many cells as you have, and they change based on what you feed them. So when you eat, you select out the bacteria. Well, it turns out when you have red meat or egg yolks or food or milk protein or foods with a lot of lecithin, choline, and carnitine, you change the bacteria. And Stan tells us how, and we'll tell you next week how you change the bacteria. You do produce trimethylamine and butylbutane. You absorb the butylbutane, and that causes long-term kidney damage. You absorb the trimethylamine, which goes to your liver and automatically produces trimethylamine oxide, and that causes inflammation, which increases heart disease, stroke, memory loss. It probably also increases your risk of cancer and increases your decrease in energy level and causes brain rot probably. But we'll come back to that. And what Stan did, that was studies that from about 3 years ago, and he promised me that he would tell me this year what you can do to decrease that. Well, I'm prepping you because next week, because it's embargoed till then, the paper comes out in Cell next Wednesday, 1 p.m. I can tell you about it. So next Saturday, you'll hear it on this show, what you can do and what Stan told me you can do and what he does to decrease his risk and what you can do to decrease your risk. It's really very simple. And you may be able to have steak and enjoy it too over the long run, not in the short run. I don't want you to go away from a plant-based diet in the short run, but in the long run, maybe we'll be able to change our microbiomes so that we're much healthier and healthier for the long run. I'm going to go over my four New Year's, if you will, resolutions. I'm going to have a stop do list. Remember, all of us have a to-do list? Well, Jim Collins, the author of Good to Great and Built to Last, said, we had a talk that I heard yesterday, we all ought to have a stop-do list. How many of you have that? Well, one of my resolutions is to have a stop-do list, to stop doing some of the things I'm doing and to have it on a list. 10K, 10,000 steps every day, no excuses. No way I'm going to, now, some days, like today, I've only got 6,383 steps. I'll get 10,000. I'm going to get 10,000 every day, never miss. I'm missing two or three days a month, and I'm making it up, but I want to be absolute. We're running out of time. We'll be right back with Jenny Santi and the Giving Way to Happiness.
It all started with a seed and a dream to grow sesame in the United States. Now, farmer Jimmy Kinder and others have thriving sesame fields in Oklahoma and other locations. Now, Harvest Stone is more passionate than ever about bringing you delicious and nutritious whole grain snacks. From our crispy organic bowl, original or cheese mixes, to our organic original sesame seed, tomato basil, and cracked pepper crackers, we're committed to using only the highest quality grains and seeds grown by farmers we know and trust, like Jimmy. After all, the best way to create snacks we feel good about is to start with ingredients we feel good about. Snack on something real. Check out HarvestStoneSnacks.com and be sure to request Harvest Stone products at a store near you. Harvest Stone has your snacking covered.
Her Radio with Michelle King Robeson.
I'm going to be totally honest because that's all I know how to do and my life is an open book anyway. Give me a tip to develop a deeper connection with myself, right? That's what I'm struggling with.
The short answer is to do less in general and make it more meaningful.
And Dr. Pamela Peek, MD.
My friend and colleague, Dr. Regina Benjamin, who's the 18th Surgeon General of the United States.
Thank you for having me and thank you both for what you do to get the health messages and public health messages out there.
The naked truth about women.
Michelle, what comes to your mind?
Friendships.
Oh, okay.
Healthy women cultivating friendships. I mean,
we bond.
Right, exactly.
We bond like there's no tomorrow, and it's so healthy, and there's so much scientific research.
Listen live every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern and always on demand at RadioMD.com, iHeartRadio Talk, and the free TuneIn Radio app. Stay well.
For more than 45 years, Barbara's has created delicious cereals and snacks made with simple, wholesome ingredients you and your family can trust. Barbara's breakfast and snack items are lower sugar, higher protein options, free of artificial ingredients and colors, with the majority of its product profile non-GMO Project Verified, committed to better health and better taste. Barbara's gives families real, wholesome food that's tasty, too. Check out all of the products at Barbara's.com.
I'm a paramedic, and it may sound silly, but a lot of people are afraid to call me when they're experiencing chest pain, or to call 911 if they're with someone experiencing chest pain. You know why? Because they think it would be embarrassing if it were a false alarm. Instead, people risk permanent damage or death because they're afraid they might get a lecture. That's ridiculous. So if you have an uncomfortable pressure, fullness, squeezing, or pain in the center of the chest that lasts more than a few minutes, call me. If you have a pain that spreads to the shoulders, neck, or arms, call me. If you have any discomfort in your chest with lightheadedness, fainting, sweating, nausea, or shortness of breath, call me. If you have any of these symptoms or are with someone who does, dial 911 right away. And if it is a false alarm, I'm not going to give you a lecture. I'll be happy to see you. I would much rather treat someone who isn't having a heart attack than to try to save someone who is. To learn more about heart attack warning signs, call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA-1 or visit us on the web at AmericanHeart.org.
Adopting a new pet is a rewarding experience. And Shelter Pets make super pets. Your new best friend will steal your heart, bring you happiness, and enrich your life for years to come. You can make a difference in the life of an animal. Adopt and bring home a Shelter Pet today. To find out more, visit theshelterpetproject.org. This message has been brought to you by the Humane Society of the United States, Maddie's Fund, and the Ad Council.
RadioMD.com. It's your life, your health, it's your show. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
And this is Dr. Mike. We have a wonderful guest who's written a really remarkable book, The Giving Way to Happiness by Jenny Santi, J-E-N-N-Y-S-A-N-T-I, The Giving Way to Happiness. And she has what, or had, I don't know if she still has, I think she is no longer doing it, what might be called the ideal job after getting her MBA. We'll come back to that in a second. But I do want to tell you, we are not live. I've pre-recorded the entire show just because I'm at going to a philanthropy session this weekend on looking at entrepreneurs who are giving to philanthropies. And so I'm not going to be available this weekend, so we pre-recorded it a little bit, not many days in advance. That's why you hear the latest medical news still. So don't email me, don't call in, but because we use social media beforehand, you've asked a series of questions that I'm going to convey to Jenny Santi. By the way, the website is jennysanti, S-A-N-T-I.com. Jenny, thanks for being on the show.
Hi, Mike. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I'm going to set the stage, if you will, before we get to the questions. But I'm going to just set the stage of the questions. One is philanthropists versus ordinary people. Why aren't doctors bigger donors? The mafia and evil, if you will, givers, that is people who've done evil in life, and do they get the same benefits of happiness when they give? And then ordinary people and families, how do families get together and give if they're ordinary people versus philanthropists? And then the other really great question is, of course, how does this give happiness, and how did you find out about giving happiness? So let's set the stage. You're an MBA at Wharton. First of all, what did you do before you went to Wharton to get your MBA, and then what happened to get you into the world of philanthropy?
Oh, okay. I actually have a background in management consulting, and my work in philanthropy advisory is essentially still a consulting job, and I see myself as a management consultant where all my client engagements are philanthropy-related. So they have to do with setting up a foundation or improving the operations of an existing foundation. So it's essentially that. And as a philanthropy advisor, I see my role as helping my clients channel their wealth, their power, and their influence towards social good.
So how did you get, after you graduated college, you went to Wharton at the University of Pennsylvania to get your MBA. What then happened to get you into management consulting for philanthropy?
All right. Well, let me just clarify the sequence of events. So actually, I graduated college, and then I worked as a management consultant. Actually, I worked as a teacher first. I worked as a teacher for a year, and then I moved to London to be in management consulting, and I did that for a couple of years. And after that, I pursued my MBA, which was actually at INSEAD, which has campuses in Fontainebleau in France, as well as Singapore. And during that time, I was also an exchange student at Wharton Business School. And it was during that time when I was doing my MBA that the idealist in me decided that I wanted to have a job that allowed me to make a difference, and that I was going to explore what that job might be. And it was a chance encounter with a person who was already at that time a philanthropy advisor. I met him in an event in my school one day, and I got fascinated with this job description. And about a year later, I was offered the opportunity to work in his team, and then it happened to me very quickly after that. I found myself running the philanthropy services department of a private bank, a Swiss bank, at the age of 28.
So you're young and you're now a consultant for philanthropy, and the lessons you learned look like they're in here, meaning you all of a sudden found out in this kind of weird job where you're helping people give away money. Many of us would love that job, if you will, but you said it's actually pretty hard work in the book.
Well, yes, I've been doing this for about 8 years now. And, you know, as a philanthropy advisor, I play multiple hats. I wish I could say that my job is to help people give away their money, but it's not quite like that. They usually already know where it should be going, and they usually call me in when something's gone wrong. And so I play multiple hats as a strategy consultant, a family advisor, a facilitator of family meetings where things get contentious sometimes, a career counselor to these people, a connector and also an event planner all rolled into one. And you know, my approach is that my clients' endeavors in philanthropy should not only be making an impact on the world. I mean, that's a given, right? You have to be improving the state of the world somehow. But also, it's very important that the philanthropy that someone is doing is also personally rewarding and fulfilling for them, and it's also changing their own lives. So I essentially don't believe in giving until it hurts, rather in giving until it feels great. And that's the message of this book I've just written, which is called The Giving Way to Happiness.
So in The Giving Way to Happiness, you have a number of stories, as well as the science. And so we should say that you wield in and meld in and start with the science of why giving makes people happy. Were you surprised to find how much happiness people got by giving? In other words, did these stories or did the episodes surprise you, or did you anticipate this?
I think I anticipated it partly because it was actually one of the key motivations why I even started to write this book. I was struck. I had a flashing light bulb moment one day when I was at a conference, a philanthropy conference that was happening in Beijing that I had helped organize. And then I was looking around the room and I suddenly felt that there was something that everyone in that room had in common, and everyone in that room was involved in the social sector somehow, whether as a major donor or as a nonprofit professional or as a social entrepreneur or as a volunteer. And these were people from different walks of life, some very wealthy, some just average, some with very little. But I was struck what these people had in common, and then there was a very palpable sense of joy in the room, and I decided to write about that. You know, I decided to write about what giving does to change the life of the giver. So it's not just happiness.
When we come back, I'm going to put those questions to you that I was put to by the people who emailed me, that is philanthropists versus ordinary donors, mafia and evil doers, and does giving feel like they absolve themselves and that's why they feel happy, why doctors don't give more, and then how do we get this to ordinary people? That is there something special about philanthropists, or do ordinary people feel happiness? We'll be right back with Jenny Santi, S-A-N-T-I, on The Giving Way to Happiness.
Packing for a trip? I know that many travelers like you wish there were more options to stay healthier and happier away from home. Enter Even Hotels with a wellness-savvy staff, a best-in-class fitness experience, healthier food choices, and natural, relaxing spaces. There's no excuse to miss your workout there with fitness options for core, cardio, and strength from their best-in-class athletic studio to the in-room training zone. Eat well while on the road with an abundance of simple, natural, good choices, including customized menu items, freshly prepared food for specific diets, and healthy grab-and-go items. Enjoy premium amenities to wash away the stresses. And finally, at the end of every day, you can rest easy on their premium sleep system that features natural eucalyptus linens and pillow choices to accommodate every type of sleeper. If you can't stay with them at one of their locations, enjoy helpful tips from their wellness travel site, wellwellwell.com. Discover Even Hotels.
Being your best means nothing slows you down. Whether it's a hard day of chores around the house, that weekend marathon, or smashing through a workout, one thing remains the same. Recovery must occur before you can be your best. Michael's Recovery Zyme supports the body's natural inflammatory response, resulting in greater muscle recovery. Recovery Zymes is the missing link you need to be your best. Recovery Zymes' formulation of systemic enzymes and herbs, coupled with an advanced enteric coating, allows Recovery Zymes to work where needed, the muscles and tissues. Our team at Michael's also uses these formulations, so we price our products to be cost-effective. perspective because we believe that excellent health should be affordable. Recovery Zymes is the highest potency and most affordable muscle recovery formulation in the market. Elite athletes and weekend warriors all agree. Systemic enzymes are the missing link. Michael's Recovery Zymes provides them so you can move forward and achieve your goals. You provide the passion, we'll provide the support.
Ever notice when you have a baby, everyone seems to give you advice? From your mother-in-law,
don't you know you can't take that baby out in the rain today? And where is her hat?
To your own parents,
you should take the baby outside every day, even in the rain.
To your friends,
you have got to get this diaper cream. It is so much better than the one you've been using.
When it comes to the important stuff, like immunizations and protecting my baby's health, I trust my baby's doctor. She really listens to my questions about shots, she gives me great information, and she works with me to make sure my baby gets protected. And that's something even my mother-in-law can agree with.
Honey, I totally support you getting the baby vaccinated, but really, shouldn't you put the baby's hat back on?
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Where do you want to go to lunch?
I'm having a stroke.
Did you hear what I said?
I'm having a stroke.
Why aren't you answering me?
I'm having a stroke.
What's up with your face?
I'm having a stroke.
That's not normal. Is something wrong?
I'm having a stroke.
Are you having an allergic reaction?
I'm having a stroke.
When someone is having a stroke, they may not be able to say it with words, but their body language will tell you loud and clear.
I'm having a stroke.
You just need to know the sudden signs. Look for FAST, F-A-S-T. F, face drooping. A, arm weakness. Or S, speech difficulty. Then T, time. Time to call 911 immediately, because the sooner they get to the hospital, the sooner they'll get treatment. And that can make a remarkable difference in their recovery. Know the sudden signs. Face, arm, speech, time. Spot a stroke fast. Visit strokeassociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
And this is Dr. Mike. We're talking with Jenny Santi, S-A-N-T-I, JennySanti.com. The book she authored, The Giving Way to Happiness, talks about why people who give are happy and what makes them happy. And we had a number of questions, in fact, relating to the book in advance. We're doing this as a pre-tape, if you will, for the show. So rather than being on Saturday Live, we're in advance, so don't email me or call in to ask questions today. We'll resume that next week. But this week is pre-taped, and so I've got Jenny, and you've sent some questions in. One, Jenny, talk to me about philanthropists versus ordinary people. Do ordinary people, is the science such that it isn't just the wealthy who get happiness from giving, but it's all of us ordinary people, and in fact, whether it's giving time or other things, you also get happiness?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and actually in this book, I say that I don't really like the word philanthropy. I try to avoid using that word philanthropy, and I'd rather use the word giving or giver. And that's because in this day and age, I think we think that philanthropy is big ticket giving, that the moment we hear that word, we think of Warren Buffett giving billions of dollars away, Bill Gates giving half of his wealth away, and it's just not achievable for most of us. And so I just prefer to use the word giver, because we can all give, whether it's our time, our talents, or our treasures, to something we care about.
So one of the things I've seen in some families who are relatively ordinary is that they give their children X amount of money for their birthday, say $25, with the understanding that the child can spend half of it on themselves and half of it they have to name a charity and give it to the charity, but they have the money to do that with. And I wondered if you'd seen, does that bring the kids' happiness or the parents' happiness, or does it bring the family together? What's the process? Because it seems to me that's an awful good way of doing it.
I absolutely agree. In fact, I've come across families who do it in a three-part model. They give their children money with the understanding that it's to be spent in three parts. Part of it is to save. Part of it is to spend on whatever they want. And the last third is to give away. And they also had to explain very clearly why they've given it to the specific cause that they've chosen. And in this book, I actually talk about how giving together as a family, together with your loved ones, brings you closer together to one another. And not only that, giving together as a family also helps parents raise generous children, philanthropic children, children who are kind and giving. And when you walk the walk as a parent, the talk might not be necessary. And, you know, I just want to say one thing about teaching kids how to be good people. It shouldn't entail dragging them to, let's say, a volunteer drive or insisting that, all right, kids, this is the day that we're going to volunteer at a nonprofit. Because kids will just begin to see that as a drudgery. So the best thing to do is to actually get them involved in the process. Ask them, what do they care most about? Ask them about their interests. And if possible, make them make that decision. Like, for example, if your child is really an animal lover, then why not spend a day in an animal shelter? If your child loves baking or cooking, well, why not spend that time baking cookies or preparing a meal for a homeless shelter? And if you've got an environmentalist child, then why not spend the time planting trees?
Well, that sounds, it actually sounds like a great, great thing. Let me go and, meaning getting the children to do what they want to do, and I should say that in your book you go through this example, so we're giving something from the book, The Giving Way to Happiness. It's Jenny Santi. It's obviously on Amazon, but also Jenny Santi, SANTI.com, has references. Jenny, why? Let me go to a couple of those questions that people asked. Is it because doctors and maybe nurses are caregivers all the time that they look at their giving as some of that and their happiness as what they do every day, and they aren't as big givers? Or what is the reason? So I was asked this by a physician who is a generous person, but he says, my hospital, when you look at what we give in United Way versus what others give, we're lower than other employees or employers. And he said, why is that?
Well, yes. Well, you know, in this book, I talk about giving, helping people in five different ways, one of which is finding their purpose and finding a career that is not just a job, but really a calling. And also how giving helps people recover from very painful experiences, how giving helps people become closer to their families and loved ones, and how giving helps people find significance and meaning in their lives beyond material success. And so it's all good things that you get from giving. But on the flip side, the opposite can be just as true. And when you ask about doctors, this is precisely what I like to talk about. That, you know, on one hand, giving can make you feel good. But on the other hand, giving, especially giving your life to a cause or having a job that exposes you to the traumatic suffering of others on a daily basis can make you feel really burnt out. So people such as doctors, nurses, counselors, social workers, animal shelter workers are all at high risk for feeling compassion fatigue. Compassion fatigue instead of compassion satisfaction. But there are ways to move from this feeling of compassion fatigue towards compassion satisfaction that make the work worth it.
Jenny, we're talking to Jenny Santi, S-A-N-T-I, the author of The Giving Way to Happiness. You'll find the science of happiness is an important one, and she shows how giving does, in fact, engender happiness. When we come back, we'll talk more about the concept of what does give happiness. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD. Stay well.